There is a monster who lives behind our couch. If you were to visit our home, it is likely you wouldn't notice, for it stays hidden most of the time. I even forget that it's there. It can be quiet for weeks on end. And then just when I'm in the middle of a project or considering learning something new, out it jumps, small, light, furry, blue monster of self-doubt, flattening my spirits, my confidence, and my energy. It can be amazingly strong, this self-doubt. There are times it has kept me from really listening to my heart and acting as courageously as was needed. There it would be sitting on my chest with so many questions. What difference can you make? You don't really know what you're doing, do you? You know some people won't like this, right? Shouldn't you just quit now? Sometimes the monster of self-doubt speaks so loudly that it is hard to hear the quiet yearnings of my heart, of my conscience, of my spirit. Several years ago, I started developing a new relationship with this monster. Now it leaps from behind the couch, and with my heart pounding and questions and doubts filling the air, I make us both a cup of tea. We sit and talk, and I consider the monster's long list of worries and concerns and patiently explain why failing wouldn't be the worst thing, and that I'll survive if I do. I say why there is a need to show up and speak at the rally at the Capitol, even if there aren't going to be very many people there, or worse, even if there are. Why it is best to have a difficult and honest conversation rather than avoiding it. By the time our tea is finished and my confidence begins to return, along with it, my commitment to whatever task or idea is at hand, the little monster starts to look tired and it shuffles off behind the couch. Have you ever met such a monster? They come in many shapes and sizes and have different ways of showing up. The journey of my heart has included moving from fear to courage, from ignoring or struggling against to accepting what is.
Brené Brown, a U.S.-born scholar, author, and speaker, has dedicated years as a research professor studying vulnerability, shame, and courage, and how these support us or keep us from living wholeheartedly. You may have seen her TED Talk on vulnerability or heard some of our lay folks speak about her on December's service, and you've heard us perhaps speak about her as well. We who want to embrace a journey of the heart have much to learn from her work. She suggests doing things that many of us tend to avoid. Face our fears. Grapple with our shame. And that to live wholeheartedly, we need to be willing to be vulnerable. She says that vulnerability is the core, the heart, the center of meaningful experience, and that love is not something we give or get. It is something we nurture and grow. Like the young dragon in the story this morning, we often want to protect ourselves from vulnerability, protecting our hearts especially. We want to feel safe and strong. And as the dragon's grandmother reminds us, yes, our hearts are tender. And yet they must remain open if we are to know joy. And if we are to truly live.
Buddhist teacher and writer Jack Kornfield tells of a friend who went to study with a well-known Tibetan teacher. His friend didn't know much about meditation, but after some preliminary instructions, he decided that enlightenment was for him. He went off to a hut in the mountains of Vermont and brought his few books and meditation and enough food for 6 months. He figured 6 months was perhaps enough time to give him a taste of enlightenment. As he began his retreat, he enjoyed the forest and the solitude, but in just a few days, he began to notice how wild his mind could be. Not only did it think, plan, and remember constantly, worse, it kept singing songs. This man had chosen a beautiful spot for his enlightenment. The hut was right at the edge of a bubbling stream. The sound of the stream seemed really nice on the first day, but after a while it changed. And every time he sat down and closed his eyes, he would hear the noise of the stream, and immediately in tune with it, his mind would begin to play marching band songs like Stars and Stripes Forever and the Star Spangled Banner. At one point, the sound in the streams got so bad, he actually stopped meditating, walked down to the stream, and started moving the rocks around to see if he could get it to play a different tune. What we do in our own lives is often not so different, Cornfield concludes. When difficulties arise, we project our frustration onto them as though it were the rain, the children, the world outside that was the source of our discomfort. We imagine that we can change the world and then be happy. But it is not by moving the rocks that we find happiness and awakening, but by transforming our relationship to them.
Carved out patterns, worn deep with practice, so instilled we don't always notice the tendency to put our heart in a box to keep it safe. This looks a lot of ways, of course. Sometimes it is how we complain or become indifferent, or the way we know just the right buttons to push, and we are off to the races, an argument so familiar you could recite each other's lines. And there's the smoking or the drinking or the accumulation of unnecessary plastic things or the breaking of promises or the sullen withdrawal that is so habitual, we don't even try to change anymore. We sometimes live lives that are memorized, but that's not the same as living by heart. The 14th century Persian mystic and poet Hafiz wrote, "Every time a man upon the path does not keep his word, some angels grumble and have to remove a few of the bets they have placed upon his heart to win." Now, I don't know if there are angels watching out for us, gambling on our behalf, hoping that we live in integrity, taking a chance on human hearts, grumbling when we make mistakes. When we lie, when we fall short of who we can be. But I do know that by living by heart, we get to win. I have not always known this. As many of you know, I grew up in Massachusetts in a working class family. I have 3 younger siblings. My parents worked hard, but money was always tight and tempers often flared. They were quite young and didn't yet have the communication skills needed to navigate the stress they were feeling. I played sports, climbed trees, rode my bike, learned instruments, got holes in the knees of my dungarees. We didn't call them jeans then. When the subject of love and marriage came up, I was rather convinced that I would do neither. Partly because even then I wanted no part of the big flowy white dress business. And partly because I had a hard time imagining risking loving someone, given that sometimes people hurt each other. I was a bit like the little dragon. My heart seemed fragile, and I didn't want it to break. Well, as often occurs in adolescence, I began to experience crushes. The radio smarmy love songs didn't seem so smarmy anymore. Here's a little ditty about Jack and Diane. Don't stop believing. Every little thing she does is magic. A total eclipse of the heart. Okay, that one was still smarmy. But I loved that song. And I started to experience the excitement, the joy, the anticipation that love can bring. And then, of course, I also sometimes got crushed. And you coming back to me is against all odds. It's a chance I've got to take. And as I got older, that became the pattern. Crush, find a love song that expresses my feelings, risk feeling, and eventually end in heartbreak. One of those endings nearly ended me. Somehow, over the years, I had learned something about hearts, my own as well as others. While my parents seemed to have well-worn patterns and could probably recite the argument before it began again, I can also remember another pattern. When I was 8 or 9, my godfather died. Seeing my parents crying together, offering comfort in their ferocious grief, I know now that this too was part of their love. There were large and small ways that love was expressed in my family. I remember playing chutes and ladders and later Monopoly when I was old enough with my parents. My dad taught me how to pitch and coached my baseball team and my basketball teams. He drove me to soccer games. And my mom made the best Toll House cookies. One day in the 7th grade, I was coming home from the late bus after school band practice, and I couldn't breathe. I had gotten to the top of this hill coughing and choking. It hurt so much to intake air. A neighbor came out to see what was wrong. I could hardly talk. My lungs hurt so badly. I asked them to call my mom, and she came, and she put me on her back, picked up my backpack and saxophone, and walked probably a quarter of a mile home. That darn school-borrowed saxophone was likely the cause of the pneumonia diagnosis that followed. While my sensitive little self was impacted by the conflict in our home, my older, still sensitive self realizes I was also impacted by the full-bodied love my parents had for our family. It has been a journey of the heart to come to know this. The willingness to face the light blue monster of self-doubt and shame, the strength to be vulnerable, the courage to love even though we might get hurt, are necessary for us to live a wholehearted life. At this time when our Unitarian Universalist values and the U.S. Constitution and our very country are under assault, we will need to do more than want our hearts to be more loving. We are going to have to practice it, up close and personal, with the people who share our values and with the people who have a different strategy for addressing their fears and their hopes. When difficulties arise, we project our frustration onto them as if it were the rain, the children, the world outside that was the source of our discomfort. We imagine that we can change the world and then be happy. But it is not by moving the rocks that we find happiness and awakening, but by transforming our relationship to them.
And you, dear ones at UU Schenectady, we are so grateful to be on this journey with you, this journey of the heart. Rather than just rearranging rocks, we've been learning to get more comfortable with being uncomfortable. Lots of folks here have been having conversations about white fragility, which is a characteristic of the culture of white supremacy. And we've been having conversations about racial justice. If you haven't yet had a chance to be part of this life-changing work, Don't worry, there will be many, many more chances, and we'll keep at it together. It is a long journey. And look around at all the wonderful companions we have to make that more bearable.
The journey of our hearts is sometimes a long and winding road. And there are pitfalls, and there are snowy meadows. There is company, and there is solitude. Sometimes we lose our way. Occasionally we stumble and need help to get back on track. Our spiritual practices of coming together for worship, of generosity, of gratitude, of singing, of living in integrity so that the angels don't grumble and lose their bets are vitally important on this journey. With powdered sugar and boxed juice, or meditation retreat and rocks, beloved community is possible. I'd say the journey is necessary to bring about the world we dream about. That journey where refugees are welcome, where Black lives actually matter, where women can make their own informed choices about their bodies, where people who are queer, identified, bisexual, gay, lesbian, transgender, heterosexual, asexual, and questioning can love whomever we will, where we care for the earth by living more sustainably, where all of the world's religions of love and peace may flourish, where we, dear ones, can live interdependently by heart. This can still happen anywhere. Not everything is lost. Love calls us on. May it be so. Salam.
Shalom. Shalom.
Ashe. Aho. Namaste.
Amen.
Amen. And blessed be. Our closing hymn is a collaboration between Reverend Kendall Gibbons and the Reverend Jason Shelton in honor of the retirement of the Reverend Nancy Anderson in New Mexico. Many of you have sung this a few times in the last year and a half or so. And in that year and a half, I'm wondering if the Ministerial Search Committee is experiencing any sense of deja vu. This is the service that we preached during pre-candidating week when they selected to invite us to come be with you. Do you recognize it? Yes, lots of nods. Yes, lots of nods. It has been a journey of the heart, for sure. The words will appear on the screen, and Tim will play it through once for us. Let us rise in spirit and or in body to sing, Life Calls Us On.